It is time now for Green Visions, a KUMD production to encourage green thinking and green actions. Green Visions is made possible by All Energy Solar, a full-service solar installer in the Twin Ports, and by the Minnesota Power Energy Conservation Program, making progress toward a lower carbon energy future. David Abbas joins us on the phone this morning. He is the Executive Director of the University of Minnesota Extension Northeast Regional Sustainable Development Partnerships. What we're talking about this morning has to do with the idea of a land trust. When Cindy Hale joined us a little bit earlier this week on The Simple Plate, she talked about how for people who want to get into farming, land is so expensive, and you've got to find somebody also that wants to sell it or lease it to you. So there are all kinds of creative programs being developed that are helping to make the idea of small-scale farming, again, more accessible to people who maybe do not have relatives that have been on the land for hundreds of years the way it used to be. And David joins us this morning to tell us more. Hey, David, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
So let's talk about this idea of a land trust. How does that work?
Well, the idea came, what we do with the Northeast RSDP, or the partnership, is one of the things we do is we try to connect communities to university resources. And we have four focus areas, and one is on agriculture and food systems. And so every year we have a process where people send in ideas. And we had one idea from the Lincoln Park area come and say, hey, we want to have enough land around Lincoln Park set aside so we can grow as much as our food as possible. And I had conversations with them, and along with all the different years and decades of people saying, well, how are we going to get land access? So what this would be is access to land in trust, and it would be made available for new growers and harvesting of food in our communities. And so the idea of the land trust is to acquire and hold land that would then be available to lease, rent, lend to individuals to give them access, because not only is land expensive, a lot of younger people, and a lot of them are new farmers, have college debt, health care is a challenge, and then you have a small margin profit, if any profit, in growing food. And so all those things coming together, what we want to do is eliminate one of those problems. I put together a little slideshow of some of the ideas we've been throwing around, and we came up with this land trust. It has two aspects. One would be land for those growers. So say we have a town of Two Harbors, say. They've got about 2,500 people. And what I've done also, I did some research years ago on food capacity, food shed work. And I've built a tool that you can punch in the population. It'll tell you how many acres of land you need for all the fresh fruits and vegetables and fresh milk. And in Two Harbors, it comes to about 250 acres are needed for all the fresh food. So what this land trust would do is take that as a goal for that population center and try to get people to lend, give up land, to share funds that then land can be purchased, just like any other trust, and that'd be held. And then people who wanted to start growing those fresh foods around Two Harbors would be able to do that by accessing this land. The other interesting part of this land trust idea that we're talking about is looking at access to land for hunting and fishing. And this goes to the historical treaty of 1854. And what we have is the native people who've been here a long time were signed this treaty that provided the ceded territory. And from Crane Lake down to Moose Lake up to Grand Portage, this whole land is, as is in the treaty, it says such as them as reside in the territory hereby ceded shall have the right to hunt and fish therein. And so this second part of this land trust idea is to have individuals like myself. We have a 120-acre farm here in Finland, and the back 80 acres, we could enter that into this program that would basically map farms or lands that are currently under private non-native ownership, and it would basically say, hey, you can hunt and fish there freely. And because even though we're within the ceded territory where our farm is, because everything's privately owned, it's not a practical thing for them to exercise their rights of the treaty. So that's a second aspect, is for native people to be able to hunt and fish throughout the area by those volunteering to offer that land up. Because a lot of that treaty was not honored from the original. So what this really is, it's about equity and justice in our food system. Whether you're growing food, having access to land, 90% of all land in the country, farmland, is owned by white people. And that's great. I'm one of them. But that also gives us a responsibility. How are we going to pass this on? How are we going to build equity into the system? And whether you're a poor white person that doesn't have access to land, or someone historically who's been limited their access to land, or land has been taken away, this land trust tries to address with food access by holding these lands in trust for these activities.
Now, if you say, all right, say you want to set aside your 80 acres as a part of that land trust, do you sell that land, or do you gift that land, or what is
right?
What's your carrot, so to speak,
right,
to give up 80 acres?
Well, and for the growing of the food for the young farmers, those would be lands that are gifted and or purchased through gifts and fundraising. So those would be actual lands held by the trust for the next generations and generations to come. So, yes, if we had a 80-acre farm and none of our children wanted to return and we didn't, you know, that happens all the time. That's what land trusts are built on. But these trusts would be with those purposes. So we know of a lot of people, a lot of the farms end up in women because the men die typically earlier than women. And so the land ends up with the widow throughout our country. And we have a lot of land that are held by widows. And sometimes there's no heirs, or the heirs don't want to return. And they would put that type of land into our program. My 80 acres for the hunting and fishing, we would just write either put it into our deed or write a memorandum of understanding that then would be mapped by this land trust, so that Native people could look at the map. And not only would it provide more access for them to express their rights, but it would also develop avenues of communication, of connection, of people even know we actually are living in ceded territory that was provided through the U.S. government through a treaty. So there's a lot of different aspects to this, and the underlining one is access to land that those that don't have it and have it limited, and to provide some equity and some opportunity for all in our society to build a system, especially right now, where we're learning, even though it's been true all the time, that food is a really important thing, and how we get it and how we move it and who's in control of the food and where is it coming from is not just nice. It's essential. And so this land trust would, if it gets going with this group of people and gets some legs and starts running, this would be part of the solution as we look forward, because land is just one part.
Well, it is a fascinating topic to talk about these ideas and to talk about ways of... I found it fascinating to talk with Cindy and to understand in a historical context how, for example, the farm that my grandfather had that then went to my uncle and to my cousin, how that farm evolved over time and why it evolved the way that it did. It's a fascinating conversation, and the idea that now we're taking a second look at it and saying, you know, it probably makes more sense to have more of these resources available locally instead of having to ship them in over miles and miles and days, because what if there's, you know, a pandemic? And then we've got a problem. Right. Well, let's hope that there are people like you and your organization that are working hard to try to take advantage of the situation to rethink the way we're doing things and to say maybe we want to make a change now. Someone pointed out on this very feature a couple of weeks ago, she said, this demonstrates that we are capable of making dramatic, rapid, systemic change.
Well, it's been pretty evident, you know, just in looking at what Congress has approved in terms of funds towards the COVID, you know, incredible crisis that we have to, and those funds came, you know, they could also come for climate change. They could come for some of these big issues that are affecting our world. And, you know, really it's about how are we going to make our society function in a way that's more meaningful, more rich, more safe, more secure. And so I think there's a great opportunity right here. The underbelly's been exposed, and we're seeing some challenges, and we're reevaluating how do we want to live? What do we want to do? What's important? And with our organization, we're focused on sustainability and connecting community champions with the university and the university with community champions to try and solve some of these problems.
Well, David, thank you so very much for joining us this morning. We'll get some links set up so that folks can read more about the program and educate themselves and reach out if they have additional questions. And I appreciate your taking the time for us this morning.
Great. Thanks for having me on.
David Abbas, this morning our guest on Green Visions. He's the executive director of the University of Minnesota Extension Northeast Regional Sustainable Development Partnerships. And he joined us this morning as our guest on Green Visions. Green Visions on KUMD is made possible with support from Heritage Window and Door, the Duluth Superior supplier for Renewal by Anderson Windows and Doors, and from the Minnesota Power Energy Conservation Program, making progress toward a lower carbon energy future.